Okay, welcome everybody.
Thank you for all coming in on time.
Those of you who haven't met me before, I'll just do a brief explanation of who I am so that you know that I know what I'm talking about. Okay. The leaflet and everything on your seat has inside a prize draw. You can fill that in and you can win 50% off a session with me, any size session, or a free CD of your choice to deal with the issue that you want dealing with. It's a two-way process that helps you win, and it helps me know what people have issues with. So if you want to tick a few boxes there, you don't have to, but it's just helpful for me to say, here's a sort of list of problems I have. Come on in, it's fine. If you've filled one in before, you don't need to fill another one in. If I'm already writing to you, then I've got your email address. So you don't need another one. And in fact, all that will happen is the system I use, it rejects if it gets the same email address again. And it goes, you've got these already, and it throws it out. Okay. Please make sure that if you fill it in, you fill it in clearly. Because quite often when I put it in the machine to mail everything out, I mail about 400 people at a time. So I obviously don't put in each one individually. And sometimes I can't read the email address, so I just can't do anything with it.
You haven't got an email?
If you haven't got an email, you can still win. It's just that I can't write to you and things. Okay? The reason I write to people is because I record all my talks. The recordings don't always come out, but you'll see the best of my talks are actually on the internet, and I will send you a link to it. So if you enjoy today and then you go, oh, you know, it's like if you go see a comedian, the next day you can't remember any of the jokes. If you go, oh, he said something really good then, and it really triggered me off, but I can't remember what it is, you can literally go and listen to it again. Okay? I give a talk, at the end I'll ask for questions and things. If you're really stuck on something that I'm talking about, please interrupt me, but you might find that I go off onto a different tangent then, because I don't have a script or anything, as you'll notice in a minute. Okay. So, I'm Stephen Blake, I live at Ruskington near Sleaford in Lincolnshire. Anybody want to fill that form in that are things you can lean on?
Just like that.
So at Ruskington, it took me just an hour to get here this morning, obviously because of not much traffic, but that's the sort of travelling distance from here. In general, the main thing I deal with is anxiety, and I help people with anxiety. And even if they've had it all their life, I can virtually switch it off and in one session. And that might take me a whole day, it might take me an hour or two, but it sometimes takes a whole day. And because of that, I do a thing called a breakthrough session. And literally, you pay one fixed fee, and that's £240. And if it takes all day, it takes all day. And it's still £240. The only time I win is if I do it in 2 hours, because I actually get an extra hour's pay then. But no, I do it because I don't want somebody there. I mean, I charge £80 an hour if you want to go for an hour session with me. And I don't want somebody who's nearly sort of got the thing sorted out and they go, oh God, it's going to slip into another hour, it's going to be another £80, I don't want to do this. No. I don't want anybody doing that. So literally, you're only paying for the first 3 hours, after that it's my problem. Okay. And I guarantee a level of outcome. So while you're there, I'll discuss where you are. I usually get people to tell me where they are on a scale of 0 to 10, on a sort of like, oh, if life carries on as it is now, how do you see your quality of life? And I want you to think about that now at the moment. So if life carries on just as it is now, right, what is your level out of 10 going forward? Okay. It's a nice thought. And I'll leave you with that one temporarily. I'll come back to it later. Okay, so today's talk is a brand new one for me. So I quite often cover similar topics each time because I explain how your mind works. And that doesn't change for each time I give it to you. So I'll cover that quickly. There's two aspects to the mind. There is the conscious bit, the bit we're aware of. And there's the unconscious mind, and the unconscious does most of the things we do. All we do is we program it, and then it runs for us. So you have programs you're born with, there's programs you learn as you get older, and then there are things we wish we hadn't learned. And we're all full of things that we should get rid of, like clear the plate. There are starving children in Africa, you know. If you don't clear your plate, I think one of them dies. I think it's a default mode that, you know, you don't clear your plate, a kid in Africa dies for some unknown reason. But that seemed to be the way it was taught to me as a child. You have to eat your dinner because there's kids in Africa who don't get any food. You know? And now, if I try and leave a pea on the plate even, it's like, but there's a kid in Africa somewhere who's going to suffer because of this. You know? And so sometimes we just get the wrong message and we carry on with it for the rest of the life. And literally we can just throw it away once we realise that it's stupid. Okay. So, you've followed all these programmes, and most of the programmes you run, because you run hundreds of thousands of programmes every minute, right? So the blood's pumping around your system now, your hearts are all going, your lungs are all going, your pH balance and your stomach is being sorted out as we speak, and changing if you've ate something and if you've drunk something. And so your mind and body work together to do everything. So the conscious bit we're aware of it is not the tip of the iceberg. It's the like 0.001% that we're understanding. Because it just runs. And if anybody can drive, the first time you learn to drive, you have this terrible conflict of how the clutch and the accelerator go at the same time, and you put it into gear, and you have to let one down and press the other one up. And then the instructor says, mirror. And you go, whoa, just a minute, I'm doing this and this. And you want me to mirror as well? You want me to look in a mirror? And you can't do it. But when you get used to it, you get in a car now and you just lose. And you used to be able to jerk down the road, didn't you? And you can't do that now. I often bet people £100 that if you go in a car park, you can do that, I'll give you £100. Because you can't do it. Because the second it starts doing that, you'll either accelerate or you put the clutch in. Because the brain's got the program that goes, oh, we need a bit more accelerator, oh, we need a bit less clutch, whatever. And it works it all out for you. And this happens with 99.9% of our life. Today I'm going to deal with the conscious aspect of it, which is called don't feed the monsters. Okay. So, and this is when we fret about things and we change the size of them. Right, we turn them into monsters. Now, the reason I'm talking about monsters is because nobody's ever come to see me yet and said, I'm just so happy. God, just so happy. I want it to stop. It's terrible being happy every day. It's really, I want it switched off. Nobody's ever done that. So that's why I'm going to talk about problems. Because we don't care if we're happy every day. That's brilliant. That's where I want people to be at. And you literally can be happy every day, and I'm a living example of it. And it doesn't mean I have less things happen in my life than you do. It just means I deal with it very well. And so when something really bugs me, I have to think, why does it bug me? How does it bug me? Did it bug them if they, you know, it bugged them to bug me to... and then I have to think about, well, what can I do about this? As punishment, you get to sit at the front. and I literally had something this morning. And it's so funny, because when something happens that I don't like, I think, this is brilliant, because I'm going to have to work out why I don't like it. And then I can tell all of you. So the fact it happened on the way here was quite interesting. Because I posted something yesterday, and I didn't explain myself very well. And just said I could turn pain off. And somebody reacted badly to it and said, you shouldn't turn pain off. And then I explained it that I only turned old pain off. And then it snowballed a bit. And they were upset. And then I got a little bit upset that, you know, I'd said the wrong thing or shouldn't have gone on there or whatever. And so on the way here, instead of fretting about it, I just went, what is there to learn? Should I go on those sort of sites? Should I say that? Should I miss that out? Should I explain myself better? And I resolved it. So I'm fine today. Otherwise, I could have been down all day going, you know, I'm not very confident about this, you know, should have been doing this work. And the strange thing is that all of us have in the background, if you're doing something you absolutely love and enjoy doing, we all think we're going to get caught out. Because there's something wrong with that statement. There's like, you like doing what you're doing, should you get paid for it?
I've actually been sacked for being too happy. I'm not joking. Been sacked for being too happy. It was like, you know, they sort of look at me and it worries them because they think, does he not know what's going on here? There's something weird about it. And I'm usually happier than the boss is. Well, that really annoys them. I was in sales once. I actually hurt more than the boss. That really annoyed him. So, it's about these things that we have, that something small starts off for the day. So I want you to think about something that's niggling you at the moment. Okay? So what I'm going to tell you now is how you're perceiving it that's niggling you. It's not particularly true that that thing should niggle you. Right? Because it might not niggle somebody else. Okay, and if it doesn't niggle anybody else and it niggles you, whose problem is it? Okay. When somebody does something and we go, that upsets me, usually in the back of our head is this thing that goes off that goes, well, I wouldn't have done that. Okay. That's usually behind things that really annoy us. Well, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have said that. Okay. And then we get on a high horse and we go, oh, no, that's terrible. And that's because our head is full of everything we've ever learned. And so all these things you learn along the way becomes this you that you are. Everything you've ever learned is part of that. But most of all is your perception of you. And your perception clouds what you see. There's a thing called cognitive dissonance. It's the only time I use technical language. It's because I remember that one. And cognitive dissonance is if you believe in something, you can't listen to anything that will counteract that and stop you believing it. You fight it. You just, no, I don't want to know this. And we will believe anything somebody says about somebody we don't like, because that would fit in with what we think of them. Right? But if somebody says something horrible about something you do, somebody you do like, that doesn't fit. Right? So we have this filter system based on our beliefs and everything else about how the world is. And what I have to tell you now that will help your life is it's totally unique to you. Okay? If you had a twin born at the same time as you, same parents, same schooling, same home, same loving environment or not, they would be entirely different to you. I've got twin grandchildren and they're as different as chalk and cheese. Oh, it is a boy and a girl. But, you know, he's a typical boy, she's a typical girl. And they've got similarities in some things they do. But even growing up in the same household, they'll see things differently and they'll perceive it differently and they'll form a different program in the head of how life works. And we all do this. So, I asked you to think about something that's bugging you at the moment. So, what I want you to imagine now is that this thing, when you first thought of it, was like the comic strip things you see of a skirting board and a mouse hole, right? A little black arch there. Okay, and there's two little eyes peering out of it. And you look down at the skirting board and you notice this thing that's bugging you, and it's the first time you see it and you go, oh, two eyes peering at me. Now, there's lots of things you can think from there. One is, what the hell is that? And then you can start going, I wonder if it'll bite me, I wonder if it's going to come out, I wonder if it'll... And because of your belief system and everything else, you'll all have different thoughts about what's going to happen next. But as soon as you concentrate on it, the rest of the room's gone. Right? It's just disappeared. You're just concentrating on that. And as soon as you concentrate on something, it's bigger in your mind. Because it now fills up most of your vision. And you'll notice this when you put a TV on at night. You put your TV on, it's a TV in a room. But as you watch the programme, suddenly there's only the TV. There's nothing else. There's nothing outside of that TV. It just takes over all your vision and all your thought processes, and you're in the story. So it's suddenly not even a screen on a wall. It's actually a story that you're watching as though you're there. And apparently when they first played movies, they played one in Paris of a train coming out of a tunnel and everybody leapt out of their chairs. And even though they knew it was on a screen, because they didn't have the concept of, like, this is a screen and this is reality, but at a different time, they all expected to get run over. And bit by bit, we're learning not to do that. So, you visualise this thing, you see the eyes, and then you go, oh, it's horrible, it's a big spider, or it's a big mouse, or it's, oh, and it'll turn into a monster, and I know it's going to turn into a monster. And the more you think it's going to turn into a monster, the more it does. And this because everything's made of energy. And as soon as you give something energy, it gets bigger. Things grow with energy. So the only way to do it is not to feed it, not to give it any energy. But there are rules for this. If you go, I'm not going to give you any energy, you're giving it energy. Because you're giving it attention, which means you give it energy. Or, I won't think about that. No, I'm not going to think about that. And you give it energy. Some things are there, two buggers, to give us a message. Like the thing I had to work out on the way here. Should I, was it them, was it me? How does it work? What should I do next time? But we don't conclude that. So everything in life is a learning issue. If we get pain and we ignore it, we get even more pain because it says, hey, what's been done about this? And if we ignore it and we go, no, I can fight through the pain, it gets worse. It doesn't get better. You don't fight through pain and it gets better. It just gets worse and worse and worse because it goes, I give you a message to get that arm mended and you haven't taken any notice. Right, have a bit more pain. Have a bit more pain. Ah, you're listening now, aren't you? Okay, until it gets so painful that you can't think of anything else. And then it goes, that's the right level then. You're going to get something done about it. Yeah. Okay. And the same with our thought processes. When we think about something, that's a mental pain. We get trapped into this thing. And so if you keep revisiting that little eyes in the skirting board and turn it into this big monster, next time you return to it, it's just the big monster. And you keep going back to it. So anything in your past that's over and done with now, you know, that's no surprise to any of you, is it? But your past is over and done with. The moment you came in the room, everything you've done, everything before this, is over and done with. And yet, still a lot of you are trapped in something that happened some time ago. Years, minutes, anything. We're trapped in that moment. And we're suffering because of it. Now, why would our unconscious that looks after us trap us in pain? Because there's something to be learned from it. That's all it can be. As soon as you take the learning from it, you don't need the pain. In the same way that you grab a rose, and you don't see the thorn, and you go, ah, and you move your finger away from it. As soon as you move the finger away, the pain stops. If the pain carries on, you go, ah, thorn, still stuck in finger, and you remove it. So when we're going back to a thought and it's painful, why would we keep going back there? There's either a lesson to be learned, or there's one of my new theories, which is if something really traumatic happens to you and it hurts you, and this is physically or mentally, you know, you fall off a horse and your unconscious goes, I'm going to die. Or somebody leaves you and you carry on with this thought. This hurts you. Now, if we let go of that pain and it all heals up, say it was instant. Say somebody comes along, you fall off your horse and it's hurting, or somebody, you just lost somebody, and somebody comes along with a magic wand and they go, no more hurt, it's sorted. Right? You now worry that the same will happen to you again because you've not learned a lesson from it. So sometimes we keep picking the scab off. We just go, oh, that really hurt, you know, I cut my arm and it went septic and everything, and I don't want to do that again. And then we go, how do I remember not to hurt myself again? And you hurt yourself now, every day. You pick the scab off. And the same with your thoughts about something that hurts you. You keep going back there, picking the scab off. Like you need punishing. But it's not. It's trying to teach you a lesson. Don't let that happen again. That's all it is. Once you've got the lesson, you can let go of the thought process. Typically, what I deal with is lack of self-worth. And quite often, the story is something like this. It might vary who the players are in this. Child comes home from school, scribbles on a bit of paper, plenty of orange on it, you know. Hands it to mummy, goes, mummy, picture. Mummy goes, oh, what is it, darling? And, it's you, mummy. Mummy goes, that's oh, I should recognise it. It's beautiful. And I put it on the fridge. Right? This teaches you that people who love you unconditionally, and you can do anything, even if it's rubbish. And you'll get some good feedback. But the same child then goes to sit on Dad's knee, who's just got him from work. And he's absolutely shattered. He just wants 5 minutes sat in his favourite chair before anything happens. And the kid sits on his knee and he goes, ah, not now. Right? And that child in that instant goes, ah, can't please Dad. Can please Mum, do anything he pleases Mum, can't please Dad. And from that moment onwards, if that's in their head, the reaction that they get from Dad will always be seen as, well, nothing you can do to please him. And that can carry on for years and years and years. In fact, it can carry on for your life. If you've had a tough relationship with your father, you then carry on to leave home early and then you shack up with somebody who's just like your dad. And the idea is that if you learn how to please these awkward people, then you can please anybody. And that's what we're here for, isn't it? To please everybody. Because this is the program we run. We think we should be able to please everybody. So we can't understand when we don't complete that loop. So we keep going back to that loop to learn how to please people who are awkward. And I'm here to tell you today that you can finish off that loop by just having the answer. And it's an answer you can't take on board as a child. Which is... some people are just arseholes. That's the answer. You're not here to please everybody. You're here to please you. If we all pleased ourselves, the world would be a lot less selfish place. Isn't that crazy? Because we're all basically good human beings. And if we pleased ourselves, we would go around with a smile on our face. Other people would see the smile on our face and would smile and carry on. But we go out and try and do the impossible, which is please everybody else. And it just doesn't work. Because however good you are, or whatever you do, some people will think you're marvellous and others will slag you off. And it's not about you, it's about them. Because just think about people who slag everybody off. What are you ever going to do to please them? And then there are some people who are nice who never say anything bad about anybody. Right? So what other people think about you is nothing to do with you. Because try as hard as you like, some people will like you and some people hate you. And what you do doesn't make a blind bit of difference. Because it's about them. So we all have this own individual map of the world and how we think it works. And the problems come when we think that everybody's got the same map. Do you want to have the door open a little bit? It's a bit
no.
Awesome. Alright? Let me know if you don't faint anybody. So, as soon as we twig that everybody else has a different map to us, it makes the world a lot better. This is a bit like if you had a map of the underground metro for Paris. And you went down London Metro underground with it. You know, it would look similar, but then you'd look at all the signs and things and they'd all read differently. So everybody on the planet has a different map to you. Now some people will have a similar map. And there'll be similar things in similar places. And this is why we get on with people suddenly and we go, oh, it's like I've always known you. Because you have similar things in similar places on your map. And it only takes something like you know, I was born in Lincoln, and somebody goes, I was born in Lincoln, and then you go, oh, I went to so-and-so. Well, I went to the school up the road from that. Oh, did you know Fred? Oh, yeah, I knew Fred. And it carries on like that. Okay? And suddenly you've got a bond with this person because you've got similar things in similar places on your map. However, when arguments start is when you go, okay, let me tell you, I've got a lamp on my map and it's just here. And it's really good because it shines on all these things that I need. And then this other person says, oh, well, I've got a lamp, but mine's over here. And you go, oh. Now, you could get on with them still and go, well, that's interesting. Or you could go, you'd better move it. Nobody has the lamp over there. Why would you want to shine on that stuff? You know, I want you to move it. And they go, but that's, you know, I want it there. No, no. And then they go, well, you move your lamp. And then you start an argument. It's crazy. We argue with people over things that are in our rule book that aren't in theirs. It doesn't matter. There was an argument the other day somewhere about people leaving cups on sinks. And, it was an article I read. This guy said his wife had divorced him because he kept sort of like rinsing the cup out and then he left it on the sideboard on the drainer, upside down, which left a ring of a worktop she'd just cleaned and all that. And he did put it in the cupboard. And she divorced him in the end because she kept telling him to put it away. So her viewpoint was, well, if you've washed the damn thing, it's only another 2 seconds to dry it, put it in the cupboard. So you're lazy, and his viewpoint was, I might want another drink in a minute. Why would I put it away? So she's doing the, you know, well, why would you do that? Because I don't like it. And he's doing the, well, why do you want it in the cupboard? Because I like it out. Can you see, that's just two different viewpoints. Neither one of them is right. She could say, this bugs me and the kitchen would look a lot nicer for it. I like the nice kitchen nice and clear, could you put it away? That might change some of the wiring and he might go, yeah, that's fine. But to actually demand that he puts it away because I want it put away, it's nothing to do with him, and how she feels is nothing to do. Because if you go down that avenue of always, you're back to trying to please everybody. Yeah, I'll put this away and I don't really want to, but I'll put it in the cupboard, and but that annoys me about you now. Right? So once we accept that everybody on the planet has got a different map, there's not a lot you can fall out about. And really, you can only then have the things that you have to do jointly with somebody where you have to actually get to a compromise. Most other things, you can let them go their own way and you do your own thing. And it doesn't matter. But like in relationships, well, you need a halfway position there. But not one where somebody always wins and somebody always loses, but where there's a situation where it's good for both sides, a win-win situation, with both of you happy. There's a good example of it, of an office with two people with desks, and one person gets a bit cold and the other one gets a bit hot, and so the one that's hot opens the window, and that blows all the papers off this desk over here. So they get up and close the window, and then this carries on all day, open, close window, open, close the window. Right? Neither is going to give in, because, well, you know, this is how I like it. But then if the one who likes the window open says, ah, what if I get a paperweight and give that to you and then all your papers don't blow away? That solves that problem and then this one can have the window open. And it's quite simple. But we get locked into, you, why don't you think like me? You know, you should understand this, you should know this. And we even do this without telling people. You know, has anybody ever had the cold shoulder? And you go, something wrong, and they go, fine. Fine is you're really in trouble. And we get fine. Now, this is quite funny because sometimes people will do this as a deliberate thing. Sometimes it's just a natural reaction. You know, they close in on themselves because they don't know how to deal with it. But sometimes this is that's taught them. Right? I shall now sulk for the next 2 weeks. I won't talk to them, and they'll understand not to do that again. Whereas the person that's being sulked at just goes, oh, they're having a sulk again. Right? And it doesn't bother them for 2 weeks. Because they don't get nagged at. They get silence for 2 weeks. Whoopee! Right? And then suddenly it's all over and done with. Nobody's learned either way. Neither one of them have learned a lesson. Right? There was a lovely thing on Facebook once, and there's a woman on a settee, and she's going, oh, what is it with John? You know, is it this? Oh, the other night we did. Oh, God, what is it? And it carries on for like a full page of this, and then it shows John on the other end of the settee, and he goes, I wonder why my motorbike didn't start this morning. That's it. That's the thought process. Right. So it's about taking things and turning them into something they're not. And we do this because we think about what we don't want, not what we do want. And I'm going to give you an example of this. And I made this up the other week. And this is just a little joke for you. But it's a joke that really slides home with how things work. Because your unconscious mind doesn't understand negative words. Right? Whatever you think about is what your unconscious mind thinks you want. If you're in a relationship and you think, you're worried it's going to end, but you don't want it to, and you keep going, oh, I hope my relationship doesn't end, it just hears relationship end. And it will get you looking for flats, it'll get you thinking about whether who gets the cat and the dog and how you're going to share things out. It won't get you a relationship that continues. Right? Because you're thinking of the relationship ending. Right? It doesn't understand, I don't want this. If you think about it, it'll get you it. Right? So all we ever have to do is stop thinking about the thing we don't want and think about the thing we do want. And this will change your life dramatically. If you can do this all the time, just spin it over, stop thinking about what you don't want and think about what you do want. As soon as you focus on what you do want, your unconscious mind will do everything it can to get you that. Okay? I look at all sorts of treatments for clients now. I've got a client with depression, thought I'd helped her, then I thought I hadn't, and then I realised how bad depression was. And I'm trying to learn about depression now. And so many opportunities have come up now to talk to people with it, or have you had a Skype the other night with a woman who'd been suicidal since she was 12, because I'm looking for how can I help people who've got depression. So it's given me all these opportunities. Whereas I could have said, oh, I don't like people with depression, it's really difficult. Right? And then every time they came, I'd be going, this is really difficult, I don't know what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be learning about it, I'd just be trying to put them off. Okay? So, here's the little joke. You'd never start a joke by saying people that you're going to tell them a joke, should you? Okay, so, this is an automatic car in the future. So the automatic car says, hello, I'm your automated car. Please state your destination, and when you have it confirmed, press the yellow button, and I will take you there. If you're not clear with your destination, please repeat it again until it is confirmed. So, the guy gets in the car and he goes, well, I live in London. I don't want to go to London. And the voice goes, London, you have selected London. No, I don't want to go to London. London, you have selected London. No, you don't understand. I live in London. I don't want to go to London. London, you have selected London. Now you're making me cross. Is that Brent Cross? Charing Cross? King's Cross? London. So that's how the car works. Now, how your brain works is like this. So your unconscious mind says to you, hello, I'm your unconscious mind. Please just think of anything you want and I will bring it to you. Please think clearly and state it in the positive. Well, I don't want to be anxious. Anxious, you have selected anxious. No, I don't want to be anxious. Anxious, you have selected anxious. Now you're making me cross. Cross. You have selected cross. Are you stupid? Stupid. You have selected stupid. you're really doing my head in. Head in, you have selected head in. And then the guy goes, ah, I get it. Okay, I get it. You want a positive, right, okay. I want to be so damn gorgeous that people fall in love with me as soon as they see me, and I want £5 billion in my bank account. Your instructions have been accepted. If you count down from 10 to 1, you will find all these things in place. Oh, right, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Looks in the mirror. I don't think anything's changed. Are you taking the piss? You started it. And whilst it's humorous, it gets over the secret, the way your mind works, does the whole lot in one joke. Because whatever you think about, that unconscious of yours is trained to get you whatever you think about. So everything you've ever worried about, you've trained it to go fetch that. It's always taking you to London that you don't want. Right? I don't want to think about this thing that's horrible. I don't want that thing in the skirting board to get bigger. Bigger? You've selected bigger. No, it's getting bigger, I don't want it. I have a client with depression and she's taught me so much over the last 6 months. And I actually saved her life the first day she came, because she'd been given my car the day before. She actually went to commit suicide and phoned me instead. And it was the strangest 10 minutes of my life on the phone, because she wouldn't talk to me. Until I twigged and I said, are you about to take your own life? And she said, yes. And I said, well, come here then. And I had 7 or 8 hours with a woman, 3 hours of which she wouldn't let me in at all. But I'm forever working with her, and there's something about when I work with people with anxiety, it goes. I take it off them, remove it, and it's gone. I haven't got it, they haven't got it, it's gone. When I take depression off somebody, that's the space they go to and they can't cope. So I took depression off this woman. She went from 0 out of 10 in the day, which is suicidal, to not wanting to live, to 8 out of 10 in the day, and I was delighted, and she was. I got several hugs on the way out and all that. But a few days later, she says, I'm not feeling very good, everything's kicked off. Because she tried to go back in this dark hole that was depression, and I'd nicked it, I'd removed it. So she had to reinvent a depression to go there. Because the unconscious mind thinks depression is a lovely place. It's a safe place to stop you having to deal with the conflict that you can't deal with. You go and hide in the depression. That's the intention of your unconscious. And if anybody's got depression, it's the most bloody awful place on the planet to go to. But somehow your unconscious mind thinks it's lovely. And it takes you there. So when you take depression off people, they keep having to have it to go back to until they learn to deal with conflict, which of course is a longer process. So I can't take depression off people because it will keep wanting to come back. So you have to deal with people then to teach them how to deal with life. So I'm dealing with her the other day, and she comes along and she's had 3 months without taking any tablets, feeling great about herself. And then just one day she woke up and something had challenged her too much. And she went towards this darkness again. And then she came to see me, and literally it was, she was depressed about the idea that she might become depressed again, which had made her more depressed. So then she believed she was going back into depression, which made her more depressed, which then made her absolutely believe she was going back into depression. And because she'd known how good life could be, suddenly there's such a big difference between what she knows life can be now and this depression. And so she's even more depressed about it. And I spent an hour with her, and suddenly it changes round. And we have lots of talks about London now. Because every time she says, I go, ah, depressed? You want depressed? No, I don't want depressed, I don't want to be. And I go, but what do you want to be? And this is the thing. We try not to think of something, but we don't give it the alternative. So the guy saying, not London, he only has to name any other place and the car will take him there. And I know it sounds simple, but it is as simple as that. And the reason it's not easy is because the safety mechanism in your head wants you to either go to anxiety state or the depressed state, because it thinks that's your safety place. I can tell you now that if you're depressed and you do exercise, you cannot remain depressed. Right? Scientific fact. But I tell you now, if you get depressed and somebody says exercise, they'll get a mouthful. Because the last thing you want to do when you're depressed is exercise. Because it will take you out of the depression. And you've been put in there for safety. So there's a real fear of not being depressed when you're in that depressed state. And when you're not in a depressed state, things are clearer and more sensible. But you have to know where you want to go to, and that's what you need to keep flicking your mind over to. You change it to where you want to go. If I tell you now not to think of a purple elephant, okay, so just think about that for a moment. I want you not to think about a purple elephant. Okay. Now, the only way you can not think about a purple elephant is to go there and think of a purple elephant and then go, I'm not going to think about it. But if anybody's heard me talk before and they go, he's going to mention a purple elephant, so I'm going to turn it into a green banana. Right? You could have gone, right, he's about to say it now, green banana. Okay? And you'd have thought a green banana. I think you'd have sneaked in a bit of a purple elephant along the way. So when we get ourselves in a state, it's quite often difficult to get yourself out of it, because once you get locked into it, you pump all the chemicals around your body that trap you in it. I had a claustrophobic attack about 2 years ago, and it was the most horrendous 4 hours. And I've had claustrophobia since I was about 16. And suddenly, I've dealt with it all my life and sort of got ways around it. You know, if I go in a lift, I'll sort of make sure I'm going on my own. And it's a very big one, and things like that. But I had this claustrophobic attack. For 4 hours, I was in so much pain, I thought I was going to die. And then I started to want to die because I was in so much pain. I didn't know how much this would change my life. And I started thinking, well, if you feel like this when you're having a phobic attack, how can I help anybody else? I can't. And then I thought, well, I can't do my job, I won't be able to get in the car again, I won't be able to go abroad, I won't be able to do anything, I might as well die. So I went from thinking I was going to die to hoping I would. But after 4 hours, the chemicals were starting to wear off a bit, and I worked out why I got claustrophobia. And I worked out it wasn't a fear of confined spaces. It was a fear of not being able to breathe, not having any oxygen in there. And the moment I did that, it rewired my brain. I went, ah, so that this phobic attack that makes me stop from going in that confined space is to stop me from dying. But it's not doing that. It's just making my life a misery. In fact, I'm more likely to kill myself with this claustrophobia than with the claustrophobia itself. So I just said, right, I want you to delete all those programs and rewire them, and as long as I've got fresh air, it's fine wherever I am. 2 minutes later, I fell asleep. I had a beautiful night's sleep. The following day, I went home, shut myself in the cupboard, was in there for about 5 minutes. I couldn't even dream of going, I couldn't even dream of talking about going to the cupboard before. And I was in there for 5 minutes and I felt boring. So I went to get out, pressed on the door handle, and the door jammed. And then about 30 seconds of doing this, and then I went, whoop, air, top and bottom, very weak door, I could kick off the hinges in 2 minutes. You know, I've got fresh air, I could stay in next week. The only difference would be I'd be slimmer when I got there. So it's not a problem. So it's all about how we think. So, I don't know what time that people are in. Is it quarter past or half past?
Half past.
Half past. Can we have a few more minutes then? We're going to show you one technique, and this is your favourite. What I want you to do is understand that when, this is not the throwing away, this is the flipping over. Okay, when we've got something and we're thinking negatively, I want you to take that out of your head. So I want you to think of a negative thought. something that's bugging you at the moment. Right? And I want you to take it out of your head. You can even do this, like, right, and put it on your hand. Cup your hand out. Everybody put your hand out. Cup it. Take that thing out of your head.
Come on. You have to join in with it.
Right, take that thought out of your head, put it in your hand. And as you have it in your hand there, I want you to make it as real as possible. Right? I want you to give it a texture, a weight. Merry Christmas. Give it a weight, give it a colour, texture. Give it a smell and a sound. And bear something down in your hand. Now, if this is a real problem to you, this is going to be quite heavy. Right? Feel the weight of it. As soon as you're convinced this is real, okay, I want you to imagine that that hand had negative written on it. Okay, so this is your problem. And if you keep thinking problem, 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 all you'll do is keep having a problem. Right? So I want you to now flip your hand over like that. Okay. Now, notice that your brain now is a little bit lighter because you've just dropped the thing that was bothering you. Okay. In fact, if I got you to put your hand the other way around and try and put it on again, let's do that. Just put your hand down, try and put it on again. And just notice it's changed a bit. It's lighter, it's a different colour, it's smaller. Okay, just put your hand over again. Now, I want you to imagine, like those old tattoos that used to be love and hate, but this time you've got positive written across the back of your hand. Alright, so as soon as you turn your hand over, you've now got positive there. You can all put your hands down there. And this is a technique I want you to do. As soon as there's something bugging you, just understand you're feeding the monster. You're thinking about the thing you don't want. Your unconscious mind will try and get it for you now. So you want the opposite. So when you do that, you go, well, that was negative. That was what I don't want. What do I want? And the moment you start thinking about what you do want, it'll head you towards that instead. Don't see things as problems, because if you go, I've got a problem, I've got a problem, and you go to bed, you wake up in the morning, the unconscious go, don't forget you've got a problem. If you go to bed at night with a challenge and you go, I would like the answer to this, but I'm not going to work it out consciously, you do it. And you pass it over to your unconscious, and a few days later or in the morning, it'll give you the answer. It's as simple as that. It works on automatic. Your conscious mind works on all this clutter and things going on in the day and everything else, and it tries to work on all that and it can't do it. You give a problem to your brain, but you call it a challenge and you say, I want the answer to this. Now, it might come back to you and say, well, how would you like it to turn out? Because otherwise you're going to bloody London. Right? You can't just keep going, not London, not London, and say it louder and louder and louder. Tell it where you want to go. And just as a final aside, a lady came the other day, and she told me what she wanted to get rid of, and I said, that's fine, but what would you like in your life? And she said, well, on one hand, this is without her knowing this technique, we've got one hand I want this, and the other hand I want that. So I made her make both these things real on her hands. And then I'd never done this before in my life. She was absolutely depressed. I couldn't get a smile out of her or anything. So she's there with these things on her hands. And I go, are they both real? And she went, yeah. And I leapt forward and I grabbed both hands and I squashed them together. And I held on for dear life. And I went, this will salt it. And her eyes started darting all around the place. And then she started laughing. And then she was uncontrollable laughing. This is a depressed woman. And she went, what the hell's going on here? And I said, oh, we're just sorting it out for you. But you don't need your conscious mind. Your unconscious is taking everything on both those hands and it's combining them to give you the answer of what's best. And it did. She just changed while she was there. But if you'd have seen her face, it was a treat. Okay? Don't work things out with your head. Don't do it. Feed it to your unconscious. Just say, hi unconscious, you know, you do lots of things. Here's another job for you. If you want something doing at work, you never give it to the person that's got nothing to do, do you? You give it to the one that's busy, because they'll get it done. And you do the same with your unconscious mind. You go, here, have this, you work on that. And it'll give you the answer. The same way it gives you the name of the actor that you point at the TV and you go, who's he was in the bill, all in the bill, and 2 days later you're walking down the street and you go, Alan Ladd, it was Alan Ladd, and everybody looks at you like crazy. Okay, because if you ask your unconscious any question, it will keep looking for the answer. If you ask it terrible things, why did this terrible thing happen to me, it will keep looking for the answer. And it will keep taking you back to that terrible thing to keep pointing it out. Right? Solve a few of your problems, and just remember that sometimes people are just arseholes. I leave you on that point. I've been speaking about you, you've been fantastic already. Thank you very much.